In school, Langan could walk into a language test where he had not studied at all, and if they were 2 or 3 minutes before the instructor arrived, he could skim through the textbook and ace the test. In his early teenage years, while working as a farmhand, he started to read widely in theoretical physics. At 16, he made his way through Bertrand Russell and Alfred North Whitehead's famously abstruse masterpiece, Principia Mathematica. He got a perfect score on his SAT, even though he fell asleep at one point during the test. He did math for an hour, his brother Mark says of Langan's summer routine in high school. Then he did French for an hour. Then he studied Russian. Then he would read philosophy. He did that religiously every day. Another of his brothers, Jeff, says, you know, when Christopher was 14 or 15, he would draw things just as a joke, and it would be like a photograph. When he was 15, he could match Jimi Hendrix lick for lick on the guitar, boom, boom, boom. Half the time, Christopher didn't attend school at all. He would just show up for tests, and there was nothing they could do about it. To us, it was hilarious. He could brief a semester's worth of textbooks in 2 days and take care of whatever he had to take care of and then get back to whatever he was doing in the first place. On a set of 1 versus 100, Langan was poised and confident. His voice was deep. His eyes were small and fiercely bright. He did not circle about topics, searching for the right phrase or double back to restate a previous sentence. For that matter, he did not say or ah or use any form of conversational mitigation. His sentences came marching out, one after another, polished and crisp like soldiers on a parade ground. Every question Saget threw at him, he tossed aside as if it were a triviality. When his winnings reached 250,000, he appeared to make a mental calculation that the risks of losing everything were at that point greater than the potential benefits of staying in. Abruptly, he stopped. "I'll take the cash," he said. He shook Saget's hand firmly and was finished, exiting on top, as we like to think geniuses invariably do. Just after the First World War, Lewis Terman, a young professor of psychology at Stanford University, met a remarkable boy named Henry Cowell. Cowell was raised in poverty and chaos. Because he did not get along with other children, he had been unschooled since the age of 7. He worked as a janitor at a one-room schoolhouse not far from the Stanford campus, and throughout the day, Cowell would sneak away from his work and play the school piano. And the music he made was beautiful. Terman's specialty was intelligence testing, the standard IQ test that millions of people around the world would take over the following 50 years, the Stanford Binet, was his creation. So he decided to test Cowell's IQ. The boy must be intelligent, he reasoned, and sure enough, he was. He had an IQ of above 140, which is genius level. Terman was fascinated. How many other diamonds in the rough were there, he wondered. He began to look for others. He found a girl who knew the alphabet at 19 months and another who was reading Dickens and Shakespeare by the time she was 4. He found a young man who had been kicked out of law school because his professors did not believe that it was possible for a human being to precisely reproduce long passages of legal opinions from memory. In 1921, Terman decided to make the study of the gifted his life work. Armed with a large grant from the Commonwealth Foundation, he put together a team of field workers and sent them out into California's elementary schools. Teachers were asked to nominate the brightest students in their class. Those students were given an intelligence test. The students who scored in the top 10% were then given a second IQ test. And those who scored above 130 on that test were given a third IQ test. And from that set of results, Terman selected the best and the brightest.